Hello, fellow movie fans. I'm Lily Percy, and I'll be your guide this week as I talk with the amazing poet Naomi Shihab Nye about the movie that changed her life, Boyhood. If you haven't seen the movie, you should, but it's okay if you haven't. Don't worry, we're going to cover everything you need to know in order to follow Richard Linklater's masterpiece. The first time that I saw Boyhood, I had this feeling that Richard Linklater had been reading my diary. He clearly had been with me all through childhood and teenage years. All of the stress, the emotional roller coasters, the pain, the sorrow, the loneliness, and somehow he had captured it in this epic movie called Boyhood. It's a movie that defines a generation, and even though Naomi Shihab Nye and myself have about 30 years in between us, it's defined her and changed her life. Naomi is one of my all-time favorite poets and one of my all-time favorite people, really. And I spoke with her at a live This Movie Changed Me interview in Scotts Valley, California. So today we're going to talk about Boyhood, which is the movie that changed Naomi's life. And I was so excited when she picked this movie because there's no movie like it, in my opinion. It's one of these rare films that changes you when you watch it. The moment you finish watching it, you just kind of can't wait to watch it again. It was released in 2014, and the director, Richard Linklater, wanted to make a movie about growing up. So he filmed it in real time over a period of 12 years. And in the process, he tells a story of one boy named Mason from the age of 6 to 18 as he grows up in Texas. His parents are divorced, and it's very complicated. They're played beautifully by Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette. And the movie is raw and poetic, and it depicts the complex moments that make up our lives, the heartbreaks, the joys, the mundane. And as Naomi had described it, the slow time of childhood when your whole job was looking around. So here are two clips that we're going to watch to give you a sense of what Boyhood is, and I'd just love for you to carry them in your mind as we talk about the movie.
Are you going to move back?
I'm planning on it. You know, I got to find a job.
Are you and Mom about together?
I don't know. That's not entirely up to me, you know?
I remember when I was 6, you and Mom were fighting like mad. You were yelling so loud and she was crying.
That's what you remember, huh?
Yep.
You don't remember the trips to Galveston? Camping in Big Bend, all the fun we had?
Nope.
You ever get mad at your mother?
Yeah.
You ever get mad at your brother?
Yeah.
Yeah. You ever yell at him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it doesn't mean you don't love him, right? Look, the same thing happens when you're grown up, right? You know, you get mad at people. You know, it's not a big deal.
What did you do in Alaska?
I worked on a boat for a while. Tried to write some music.
Did you see any polar bears?
No, but I saw a Kodiak bear. It was fucking huge.
Dad, that's 50 cents for the F word.
Sorry. Here, take a dollar, all right? Keep the change. You guys are gonna be seeing a lot more of me, okay? I missed you two real bad while I was gone, okay? I want you to know that. I just needed to take some time.
I think I'm gonna put the house on the market.
Why?
This house is too big for us. I mean, you're going to school eventually. It's too expensive. I'm done.
Well, why did you even buy it in the first place then?
Because I really enjoy making poor life decisions, keeping us on the brink of poverty. I mean, I've spent the first half of my life acquiring all this crap, and now I'm gonna spend the second half of my life getting rid of all this stuff.
Really? Like what?
Like, well, I got rid of a couple husbands. Now I'm gonna get rid of a mortgage, some maintenance, the tchotchkes, the homeowner's insurance, the property tax, the plumbing. You know what, from now on, I'm gonna be mommy monk. Simple, celibate.
Don't be gross, Mom.
Fine. I'll be a poor whore with a big house. Is that better?
Okay.
So I know you wanted to read a poem that you were inspired to read because of this movie.
Yes, thank you all for coming. And I'm so excited to get to do this with Lily. No one asked me to talk about a movie in front of an audience since I was in college and took a full semester Ingmar Bergman class.
Oof, that's intense.
Yeah, this feels better. But here's a William Stafford poem that I definitely connect to thoughts I have about this movie. It's called The Way It Is. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread, but it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. I think it's that phrase, time's unfolding, because there is such incredible magic in the unfolding of these characters over 12 years. And of course, that's something that created a great stir of anticipation before many of us saw the movie.
Exactly. Just that idea that you'd be watching this real time elapse.
Yeah, just that concept that these are going to be the same actors and you're going to see them over a 12-year span, and that Rick Linklater would have the gusto and the ambition and the vision to think he could do that and then do it so effectively.
Yeah. So as you've just revealed, and this is something that most people didn't know, and I didn't know until I first met you, you love movies.
I love movies.
Yeah.
I love them very, very much.
So I wonder if you just talk a little bit about that. Like, where does your love of movies come from, and what role have they played in your life?
Well, you know, movies are images. They're image-based, and poems are images, and poems are stories, and movies are stories. So there's this fascination with what is chosen to be written and what's chosen to go on the screen. And as a poet, I have a real belief in the tiny increment, you know, the tiny phrase, the few lines that can change someone's life, the lines you memorize in second grade and carry around forever. And when I was 20 years old, a painter in Canada said to me in a kind of nonchalant, dismissive way, "Well, of course you would like poetry, because poetry is, of all the arts, it's the closest to the way people think." And I felt like she was sort of saying, you know, my art was being dismissed, the thing I loved the most, because it was just kind of this humdrum, normal, everybody who thinks has poems inside themselves all the time. But the more I thought about it, I thought she was right. You know, we are carrying these poems. I mean, your mind does not work like a novel. It works in flashes, leaps, images. And movies do too.
So, yeah, go on.
To me, this was such a movie that celebrated regular life, which is the kind of poetry I've always been interested in, too.
Definitely.
You know, daily life, ordinary life, the little random conversation. I'm thrilled that scene was picked where Samantha, Lorelei Linklater, says, "No, I don't remember all that stuff you remember." Because I think for many of us, the poems we write come out of the things that only we remember. We are the only witnesses, even though we know there were other people present.
Exactly.
They do not remember them in that way.
And also that we don't always remember the happy moments, right?
Right.
We're very selective in our memory.
Right, yeah.
So I'd like you to think back to the first time you saw Boyhood and what was going on in your life, your first impression of it, even how old you were.
Well, right when it came out, and everyone in Texas was very excited about it because Rick, as a Linklater, is a very beloved
Texan. You should say
Texan.
You live in San Antonio, Texas.
I live in San Antonio. He lives in Austin.
Yeah.
And so everybody knew the movie was coming out and it was based in Texas. And it's the only movie I think I've ever gone to with 13 people, 13 family members. And that in itself seemed weird. Like, I've never even been to a movie where I'm going to be sitting in a whole row with all these family
members. Yeah, where you fill up the entire row. Yeah,
we did. You know, cousins, nieces, son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was it about this movie that, other than it being in Texas?
Well, because we love Richard Linklater and we love others of his movies, and we were fascinated by this concept of the time frame span. And it's 2 years since the last time I watched it. And I think with the current moment in history, I saw it very differently. It felt, a lot of the things felt different. A lot of the comments, the phrases that I knew were coming, mm-hmm. I just heard them differently. And I wrote, you know, down a couple.
Yes,
but,
please do.
In a minute.
Yeah.
But one of the
we're all just so excited. We're too excited about this movie.
Yeah, I'm like trembling. I'm excited.
I know. When we saw each other right now before coming out here, I was like, all we need to say is Boyhood and then just stop.
Yeah, I know. There's that. Okay. So here's mom saying to the daughter, and this is something that really stopped me the other day. You know what, Samantha? You need to start thinking long and hard about who you want to be. Do you want to be a cooperative person who's compassionate and helps people out? Or do you want to be a self-centered narcissist? And so things like that where you realize history has changed. And also the bravery I felt of Rick bringing politics in and the way that he brought politics in multiple times through the film. And a scene later when he asks the Iraq war veteran, so what do you think, or when a character asks, what do you think it really was all about? And the guy says, oil. You know, he's the one that's been over there three times and fought or whatever.
Yeah.
And just the way Rick wove that in, I thought was amazing.
Did you enlist?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was Army National Guard and, you know, coming straight out of high school, needed money for college, seemed like a decent paying job, and did my tour. And whenever I got done, I told him if there's, you know, a world-changing event, I'll come back. Mm-hmm. And 3 months later, 9/11 happened, and I was back 9/12. And I'm proud to say the 456, the whole time we were there, we never lost a guy, not one casualty.
But is that odd? Is that unusual?
Yeah. Almost impossible. Like the guys that came along after us and replaced us, they didn't listen to any of our advice. They, you know, did basically the polar opposite of what we did. And they lost 7 guys in the first month.
Wow. What did you guys do differently?
Well, I like to think it's just a matter of mutual respect. You know, I mean, all the time we spent over there building trust, I mean, these guys basically destroyed it in 3 days.
So what did the locals think about why we're there?
Oil. Plain and simple.
He wove in all these important moments in our lives. One of my favorite scenes is when you see the kids going to get the last Harry Potter book.
Yes.
Which was, for anyone who did that, it was such a touchstone of your life. And just to see those joys and the lows, right, of a life.
Right. And you identify with it. And whether or not you ever spent any time in Texas or your parents were divorced or anything like that, there are so many ways that you start seeing your own life. Mm. I mean, your memory changes after experiencing this movie because you start looking back on these scenes. Like the one in the very, I think it's in the very first scene of the film where the boy, Mason, has gotten in trouble for staring out the window in school,
in class,
which is what I always got in trouble for in school. Always. Every year my parents would be called for my daydreaming habits. And the mother from the front seat of the car says to him in the back, well, your teacher says you've been staring out the window all day long. And it focuses on his face. And then he says, well, not all day. And I just so related to that I felt like invested that I became him in that one little moment. And I think a lot of people feel that in different, you feel as if you're the kids in the movie, you're the parents, you're aging, there were so many angles that you could, you know, enter into the memory that is your own as well.
Hey, I had a good meeting with Miss Butler this time. I kind of liked her.
What did she say?
Well, she said that you weren't turning in your homework assignments. And I told her I know he doesn't because I check them every night. She said she found a big chunk of them crumpled up at the bottom of your backpack.
She didn't ask for them.
Well, baby, she doesn't have to. You're just supposed to turn them in. And she said you're still staring out the window all day.
Not all day.
And she said that you destroyed her pencil sharpener.
Not on purpose.
Wait, she said that you crammed a bunch of rocks in it.
I thought if we could sharpen pencils, maybe we could sharpen rocks.
Well, what were you going to do with a bunch of sharpened rocks?
I was trying to make arrowheads for my rock collection.
So much of the movie actually reminds me of a line that you wrote in one of my favorite books of poetry of yours, which is Amaze Me, which is a book of poetry that you wrote for girls. And actually, it's when you say that, you know, how often we don't ask children the right questions. You say, what do you want to be? People always ask. They don't ask who or how do you want to be.
Right. So the scene in the darkroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, when the darkroom teacher is really putting him on the spot as a teenager.
And Mason is a photographer.
Mason is a photographer, and the photography teacher is pressuring him, like, you know, you're not kind of keeping pace with the rest of the class. You haven't finished your assignment. Yeah. You know, you're talking about art and your passion for art.
Yeah.
But how dare you?
Yeah.
Because you're not even that responsible. You know, and so there's
he's basically telling me he's going to fail in life.
Yeah. And how many of us had that conversation with more than one teacher? And it's so heartbreaking and so,
that's the deal,
so familiar as well.
I'm worried about you, Mason.
Why is that?
I'll tell you why. The images you're turning in are cool. You're looking at things in a really unique way. You've got a lot of natural talent.
Thanks.
Yeah, but that and 50 cents will just get you a cup of coffee in this old world. I've met a lot of talented people over the years. How many of them made it professionally without discipline, commitment, and a really good work ethic? I can tell you, I can count it on two fingers. Zero. It's not going to happen for you, Mason. The world is too competitive. There are too many talented people who are willing to work hard and a buttload of morons who are untalented who are more than willing to surpass you. As a matter of fact, a lot of them are sitting in that classroom out there right now. You know what they're doing? They're doing their assignments, which is what you're supposed to be doing, but you're not. You're in here. Now, why is that? You special, Mason?
No, but I mean, the things you're talking about, like work ethic or whatever, I feel like I do work pretty hard. I spend the whole weekend taking pictures a lot of times.
You know, one of the biggest lessons for me in watching Boyhood is the importance of being present.
Yeah.
To the world around you, but to those little moments that make up a life, the little moments we often aren't seeing.
Paying attention.
Yeah. And it made me really think about, your work and your poetry and something Bill Moyer said about you, that you write about the ordinary things we take for granted until it's almost too late. And it really reminded me of a particular poem that I'd love for you to read called The Whole Self.
Mm. I'd love to. I haven't read that poem in a long time. This has a reference to the Hokey Pokey.
It does.
Does anyone remember that?
Yeah.
I don't even know, do they still do that in PE anymore?
They did when I was in PE, yeah.
Yeah, oh wow. Okay, so it has a quote from that verse of the Hokey Pokey. You put your whole self in, you put your whole self out, whole self in, and you shake it all about. Yeah, the whole self. When I think of the long history of the self on its journey to becoming the whole self, I get tired. It was the kind of trip you keep making over and over again. The bag you pack and repack so often, the shirts start folding themselves the minute you take them off. I kept detailed notes in a brown notebook. I could tell you when the arm joined, when it fell off again, when the heart found the intended socket and settled down to pumping. I could make a map of lost organs, the scrambled liver, the misplaced brain. Finally, finally, we met up with one another on a street corner in October during the noon rush. I could tell you what I was wearing, how suddenly the face of the harried waitress made sense. I gave my order in a new voice, spoke the word vegetables like a precious code. Had one relapse at a cowboy dance in Bandera, Texas, under a sky so fat the full moon was sitting right on top of us. Give me back my villages, I moaned, the ability to touch and remove the hand without losing anything. Take me off this mountain where six counties are visible at once. I want to remember what it felt like loving by inches. You put in the whole self. I'll keep with the toe. But no, it was like telling the eye not to blink. The self held onto its perimeters, committed forever, as if the reunion could not be reversed. I jumped inside the ring, all of me. Dance then, and I danced, till the room blurred like water, like blood. Dance, and I was leaning headlong into the universe. Dance! The whole self was a current, a fragile cargo, a raft. Someone was paddling through a jungle. And I was there, waving. And I would be there at the other end. Oh, that's like the characters in the movie. Oh,
right?
Thanks. Thank you. That gives me goosebumps. Thank you so much for making that connection at all. And, you know, think about what an act, because I do a lot of poetry workshops, people often talk about the risk involved and the act of belief, like jumping into the page. Hey, that's nothing compared to making a 12-year movie.
Exactly.
You know, I think to jump into a blank page, who cares? You know, so you don't like what you come up with on the blank page, tear it out, cross it out, turn the page. And that is fascinating to me too, because a lot of people are worried to write today's poem because they don't know what next month's poem might be. Who cares? You'll know then if you do it now. You know, just start working on it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And to me, that is such an act of faith and belief in your art that you would do that.
So what's the point?
Or what?
I don't know any of this. Everything.
Everything? What's the point? I mean, I sure as shit don't know. I mean, but neither does anybody else, okay? We're all just winging it, you know? I mean, the good news is you're feeling stuff, you know? And you gotta hold on to that. You do. I mean, you get older and you don't feel as much. Your skin gets tougher. And the point is those pictures you took, thousands of submissions from all over the state, and you won.
Well, I got silver. Nine other people.
I'm gonna kill you. I'm trying to tell you that I believe in you, Mason. I think you're really special. And if some girl doesn't see that, then fuck her, you know?
Hey, this next
This
one
movie, one of the characters in it really is Texas. And I'm just so curious, as someone who has lived in Texas for so long and you have such love for Texas, what you learned about it. Maybe that's something that surprised you.
Well, you know, when I moved to Texas, they moved there when I was a teenager, and so I finished high school there. It was my third high school, was Texas, and then I went to college there and have stayed there. And when you live in Texas, you find yourself defending it in all other states, because no one likes it, and you know, has a lot of negative things to say. And I actually often use Bill Moyers, Molly Ivins, and Richard Linklater as three examples of people I would consider great Texans. And it's a very welcoming place, actually, and a very, you know, the spaciousness of Texas, I think, is present in the film.
It really is.
Where you really feel the expanses of road, and even though you're in cities or towns, there are these road scenes as well. And I think that's very important to our lives, that we're, you know, surrounded by this big horizon. And just also the warmth. I mean, there is a human warmth and a compassion that often is not represented by our politicians or public, you
but
know,
by
persona.
The people.
But by the people, yes.
And I feel like watching the movie, it reminded me of how big Texas is, right? But I also think that the spaciousness of Texas is what makes the people so spacious, right? And so open.
Yeah. And I did feel that that attitude was present. And also the optimism. I mean, I feel like the mom is hopeful through the movie. She has to keep reinventing herself and keep moving. And I moved as a child many times too, and crossed the ocean, lived in Jerusalem and moved back. And my parents randomly picked Texas kind of out of a hat, out of a newspaper. But there's this scene when they're moving and they're moving from, I guess, Austin to Houston.
Yeah.
And in the beginning of the film where Samantha, Lorelei, where she says, coming out of the door for the last time of the house, goodbye yard, goodbye crepe myrtle, goodbye mailbox, goodbye box of stuff mommy won't let us take with us, but we don't want to throw away. I'll never love mommy as much for making us move. And then the mother gets mad at her and says, get in the car and stop talking ugly, you know, like that. But I love her expression. And I just so identified as a child who spoke to stuff and to plants and trees and things, and still do. I so identified with that moment.
Oh, I love
that. The departure, the letting go.
Okay, let's go, because I want to get there before it gets dark.
Goodbye, yard. Goodbye, crepe myrtle. Goodbye, mailbox. Goodbye, box of stuff mommy won't let us take with us, but we don't want to throw away. Goodbye, house. I'll never like mommy as much for making us move.
Samantha, why don't you say goodbye to that little horseshit attitude, okay? Because we're not taking that in the car.
Goodbye, old lady. Listen to rock music and rides a motorcycle.
My friend, the communist, holds meetings in his office.
One of the things I love the most about the movie is how often it shows the reality of of change.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think in a lot of ways the movie could have shown their childhoods as being unstable. But it right. never passes judgment on it. It just presents it as it is, right? And it right. actually is beautiful as a result.
Right. It doesn't pass judgment. It doesn't explain. It honors these unobtrusive, quiet moments, these little scenes, and it holds them. And it sort of, and it connects them. I mean, the thread of time
yeah.
is the connector. And also the fact that, you know, you've fallen in love pretty much with those four main characters
yeah.
By the time you're an hour in or yeah. an hour and a half in. I mean, you just want to know what, you know, how this will unfold.
Yeah.
Are you going to see your sister when you guys are in Austin?
Yeah, she said I can stay at her dorm, which is cool. And I guess her roommate's out of town, so it's no big deal.
All right. Well, did you apply there yet? Did you get that application into UT?
Not yet, but Sheena's pretty much in, though.
Yeah, right. Well, if you know that's where you want to go, you should probably do that early acceptance thing, you know? I mean, seriously, let him know you're a man who knows what he wants.
Yeah.
A bit of decisiveness goes a long way in this life, all right?
Yeah.
Okay. And what about work? How's that going?
I don't know. It's all right. Today kind of sucked. This guy didn't show up, but it's definitely an interesting perspective on the world. People are slobs.
Well, when people ask me about you, I say that, well, Mason, he's doing great. He's got a job. He's really cleaning up. All right, hey, say hi to Annie and Cooper, will you?
Hi, your big brother. Hey, big brother.
Hey, Annie. Hey, kiddo.
Say bye-bye.
Bye.
So going back to this book, Amaze Me, which if you guys don't own, you have to buy it. It's so
Thank
good.
Thank you.
I think one of the reasons why I love it so much, apart from the fact that I still have such a little girl in me, like we
yeah.
all do,
yeah.
is because you capture so perfectly the moments of vulnerability and kind of awkwardness and confusion that comes in childhood. And I was reminded of this book when I watched the movie again in preparation to talk with you.
Oh,
and especially the end lines of your introduction. And I'd love for you to read them.
Wow, I have no idea what they are. Let me see what they are. The
You've end written lines. So much you don't remember anymore.
Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, well, this does remind me of, yeah. If you have a voice and aren't afraid to spend it, if you have many voices and let them speak to one another in a friendly fashion, if you're not too proud to talk to yourself out loud. If you will ask the questions pressing against your forehead from the inside, you'll be okay. If you write three lines down in a notebook every day, they don't have to be great or important. They don't have to relate to one another. You don't have to show them to anyone. You will find out what you notice. Uncanny connections will be made visible to you. That's what I started learning when I was 12, and I never stopped learning it. Every year unfolds like a petal inside all the years that preceded it. You will feel your thinking springing up and layering inside your huge mind a little differently. Your thinking will befriend you. Words will befriend you. You will be given more than you could ever dream. Wow, thank you. I've never read those lines out loud.
Oh, I love it.
Ever. That's so sweet of you, Lily. Thank you. But I do feel comforted by that fact of lines. If you write your lines, you know, that you will be given what you need. As in this movie, I felt comforted that there was a movie that felt so close to real life.
Yeah.
You know, that I would always think about real life differently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how the movie changed me, is that I'm kind of living inside the movie, living outside the movie as the mother of one son and one grandson. So boyhood, you know, coming up inside, you know, seeing this little boy now echoing his dad, my son, and just seeing those kind of layers, which you feel in the movie.
Yeah.
As you watch these people change and grow and have their hair cut, not.
Exactly, grow their hair long.
yeah, I love them. I love, you know, I didn't know, I'd never read before that Richard Linklater got Ethan Hawke to promise him that if he died, that Ethan would finish the project.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'd never read that
That's
in all
amazing.
My reading. Yeah, and so they made some deal like, yeah.
Such was the commitment.
Yeah, that you will get this boy to college. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I had another question, but actually I think those are amazing last words. What I'd like to do instead is end with the last scene from Boyhood. which is such a gift. And I will say, rewatching this movie, getting ready to talk to you, I actually stopped at it every hour because I didn't want it to end. And
no,
it's
you don't want it
the
to
rare
be.
Film that is 3 hours long that you're stopping, not because you're bored, but because you just don't want it to end. You don't want that experience to end. So
thank
I
you
just,
all so much for coming in
yes,
here. And we'll
and thank
watch
you.
In.
And thank we'll you, watch that
Lily. Such an honor to get to talk to you anywhere.
Oh, always, but especially about Boyhood.
Yeah, especially about Boyhood.
Thank,
thank
you.
You. Thanks so much. We'll watch the
I'm really happy that you're hanging out with us.
Yeah. Me too.
This moment's having a multiple orgasm. It's like as if all of time has unfolded before us so we could stand here and look out and scream, fuck yeah! Woo!
You know how everyone's always saying, seize the moment? I don't know. I'm kind of thinking it's the other way around. You know, like the moment seizes us.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's constant. The moments, it's just, it's like it's always right now, you know?
Yeah.
Naomi Shihab Nye is a badass, visiting poet all around the world, and a professor of creative writing at Texas State University. I love her book, Amaze Me, Poems for Girls. It's one that I go back and read almost every week. And you should definitely check out her newest one too, Voices in the Air, Poems for Listeners. Next time we're going to be talking about the Barry Levinson movie, Avalon. You've got 2 weeks to check it out before our next conversation, and you can find it on all the usual streaming sites. Or at your local library. We love libraries. This Movie Changed Me is produced by Maya Terrell, Chris Hegel, Marie Sambalay, and Tony Lee Yu, and is an On Being Studios production. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you get a chance, leave us a review. Shout out this week to Laura_sweet_B for her review. We're also hopeless romantics, so thanks for listening, Laura. I'm Lily Percy. Now stop listening to this podcast and go watch Boyhood again. And it was all yellow.